issue was the concern for liars, essentially. And we saw the first two parts of it, but then didn't get to the conclusion of it. And that's really sort of going to necessitate that we go back through the two cases just to remember them. So that's why I brought you on the sheet, just a quick summary of it. The Mishnah had said that in a case where, as I wrote on the sheet, the defendant brings a set of witnesses, and every time somebody comes in, a set of witnesses comes in to say, you're guilty, this set of witnesses just parks itself there and says, no, you were with us when you say this happened. You were with us when you say this happened. Right? Remember we said, Rabbi Yehuda said, istitis hizu. These guys are liars. They're coloring the ground with blood, or they're straying, or however we explain the word istitis. Rabbi Yehuda said, we don't believe them. We only kill the first. And we asked last time, why in the world would we kill the first? If we think they're liars, then don't kill anybody. So we gave the answers that we gave. But the point is that in that Mishnah, the Chachamim said, even though it's one set of witnesses who are saying that all these other sets, however many of them that show up, that they're all, no, you were with us when this happened, we're still willing to believe this one set against everybody else. That was the view of the Chachamim, whereas Rabbi Yehuda said that's nonsense. He says, we're not going to believe them. We're going to believe all these other people. That was the Mishnah. The Gemara brought a different case, but also involving successive sets of witnesses, but flipped. The plaintiff is bringing successive sets of witnesses who each disqualify themselves. So they testify, they get asked questions, and they end up contradicting each other and getting thrown out. It's not that there's an outside that's disqualifying. So there, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan said, when the plaintiff brings her new set of witnesses, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan said, we'll believe them. We'll believe the new set of witnesses. So, in other words, innocent until proven guilty? Yes, it's true, you brought three sets of witnesses and all of them turned out to be a joke. You bring your fourth, we'll give them an open hearing, we'll see what they have to say. That was Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, and as Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan, because we had two stories involving it, right? That was that whole backstory going on about, Rabbi Elazar saying something and not saying that he learned it from Rabbi Yochanan and all of that. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, said, no, if you keep bringing witnesses who turn out to be false, I have no reason to give you the benefit of the doubt. You bring a new set of witnesses, I'm not even interested in hearing them, right? That was Reish Lakish. So what the Gemara does now is it wants to know, can you see this as an overall scheme where there's one school of thought that says the past doesn't matter. I'm willing to believe starting now, whatever it is that starts now. So when the Chachamim said, believe this one set that's disqualifying everybody, we're just going to keep on believing them. And Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan believe that you bring me a new set, hey, I'm willing to trust. We're open that way. Whereas, on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda is not willing to trust this one set that's disqualifying everybody. And Reish Lakish is not willing to trust this plaintiff to bring another set of witnesses. Can you line them up as two different schools, the trusting school and the non-trusting school? That's what the Gemara wants to know. So we are on Hey Amud Beis. And we are specifically Lema. It is, if you see where the lines get wide on Hey Amud Beis and you go up six lines, Lema. You see that? Lema Reish Lakish to Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yochanan to Amar Kerabanan. Can you then say that Reish Lakish is consistent with Rabbi Yehuda, we are not trusting people, and Rabbi Yochanan is consistent with the Rabbanan, that we, the Chachamim in the Mishnah, and say we are trusting people? So no. Each side is going to say that the other is going to agree with them. That's the way we're going to look at it. Amar Lach Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish will tell you. Reish Lakish was the one who did not believe the new witnesses brought by the plaintiff. So Amar Lach Reish Lakish, Ana da Amri Lach Afil the Rabbanan. Even the Rabbanan, who believed the set that's disqualifying everybody in the Mishnah, they'll agree with me on our case. Why? Ad kam lo ka'amri Rabbanan hasam deleka de kamahader. The reason why the Rabbanan are willing to believe the set that disqualifies everybody else in the Mishnah is because they're not being recruited. It's not as though these mazimin, that's the word for it, it's not as though these mazimin are being hired or recruited or whatever it is. There's testimony announced. We saw a murder. These guys say, no, you were with us at that time. But nobody recruited them, and therefore there's a natural credibility. They're just, they don't have an agenda. They don't have an interest in what's going on.
Is that the fact or the assumption
that they weren't
recruited?
That's the assumption. Aval hacha, but here, ikaha de kamahadra. Here, the woman, the plaintiff, is bringing witnesses to support her case. We know that she's recruiting them. Therefore, there's lesser credibility. So Reish Lakish says, even if you believe in the Maziman case, you don't believe in our case. That's one way. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lach, and Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, says no. Anadde Amri Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. Even Rabbi Yehuda, who does not trust in the Mishnah, will trust in our case. Why? The Ad Kam Lo Ka'am Rabbi Yehuda Hasam De Amrinon Atu Kulei Alma Gabe Hani Havu Kaimi. The reason why Rabbi Yehuda did not believe it in the case in the Mishnah is because here you have these guys standing there and just saying with every set of witnesses, no, you were with us at this time. You were with us at this time. You were with us. Like, what? We were at a party? They were just, there were 500 people at the party and all of them claimed to witness this thing and that's what you're doing? That stretches credibility. But in our case, Hani Yadi B'Sahadusa, V'Hani Lo Yadi B'Sahadusa. In our case, she brought three sets of witnesses who each contradicted themselves. Okay, they didn't know what they were talking about. But each set has the opportunity to prove. It's not cumulative. There's no reason to view it as cumulative. It's like when people buy a lottery ticket, right? And they think, I bought 4 lottery tickets, I didn't win. So my 5th one has better chances of winning. That's not the way the lottery works, right? Each one is its own unit. So each set of witnesses is its own unit. The fact that the previous 3 were a mess doesn't mean the 4th one is going to be a mess. That's the idea. Clear? So you can't make an analogy between the cases. Can I get a cup from one end? Either end. Oh, thanks. Thank you.
That was also a social experiment.
Which one? Yeah. Very devious. Okay. So that brings us to a new Mishnah. The Mishnah wants to know, this is something we already take as a given. We've been talking about it since the beginning of the Masechta, but this is the Mishnah. Which Edim Zomimin are actually getting executed? And this goes back to the discussion of Kasher Zamam velo Kasher Asa. Right? We said that the Torah says, Vasisem lo, you do to the Eid Zomim, Kasher Zamam lasos leachiv, as he planned to do to his brother. So from that we have the idea that they only get executed if they planned it but didn't succeed. So in the event that they succeeded in getting the defendant killed, we back off. For whatever reason. Xeris HaKasav, it's because of the biblical text, or because we say if they got executed, it must be God wanted it that way. Whatever reason we're going to give. If they succeeded fully, they're not getting executed. Also, as we'll see in the Gemara, if they were completely unsuccessful, they also don't get killed. They have to be successful enough that they got to a verdict against the defendant. They actually succeeded in convincing the court this guy should get killed, and then they got caught before the guy could actually be executed. It's a pretty narrow window for that to happen, because we know the halacha is that Beis Din is supposed to execute right away. Once there's a verdict in, they're supposed to execute right away, because otherwise it's inui hadin. You're oppressing this person. Like, him having to sit there knowing he's going to get executed and anticipating that is torture. So therefore, once your verdict is in, you're supposed to carry it out. So
there's no appeal.
I mean, theoretically there is. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that in the event that he comes up with new testimony, they will reopen the case. Even if he's on his way to the gallows, so to speak, they'll reopen the case. But It's hard to get to that point, realistically. Like they did their best not to execute him in the first place. There's a mitzvah for the Dayanim to Davka find him innocent. They're doing their best. So if they didn't succeed, odds are. Yeah. Sorry, what were we saying? What? What aspect of
that rule applies to the speedy justice. That's a rule general.
Hypothetically, yes. I mean, we didn't generally end up with non-Jews in a basement.
More as a rule of law.
Yeah. That's a discussion about the jurisdiction of a basement and non-Jews. It comes up in a couple of different cases. But let's see what the Mishnah does. Second wide line. Ein ha'edim zomen neheragin ad sheyigomer hadin. The Edom Zomen are not executed unless they actually got to a verdict against the defendant. Shaharei, and here we go, Hatzedukin Omrim. The Sadducees used to say, the Sadducees did not believe in the tradition of the rabbis on various areas, so the Tzedukim used to say, Ad Sheyeh Hareg, the only way Edom Zomen get killed is if they actually did execute the guy. Why? Shenamar, because the Pasuk says, now, the next words are a problem in the Mishnah. All of your Gemaras, even Baruch's new Gemara, has something that's problematic in it. It says, shout out, taken care of, Shneamar, Nefesh Tachas Nefesh, because the Pasuk says, Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. And the problem with that is that the Pasuk Nefesh Tachas Nefesh comes from Parshas Mishpatim. What does that have to do with Edom Zomen? Edom Zomen are in Sefer Devarim. What is Nefesh Tachas? Nefesh Tachas Nefesh means, all right, a life for a life, right? But what does that have to do with our conversation in any way, shape, or form? So there are those who actually change that pasuk, but I want to go through the Mishnah, and we'll get there. But right now, what our Mishnah is saying is that Stukim said, the only way you execute somebody is if he costs somebody his life. Otherwise, we're not going to do that. So therefore, it should not be that he's executed just for having reached a Gemar Din. He actually has to reach a verdict. Amru lehem chachamim. The chachamim said to the tzedukim, V'alo kvar ne'amar, v'asisem lo kasher zamam la'asos li'achiv. The pasuk says, do to him what he plotted to do to his brother. His brother is still alive. Meaning, right now I'm reading this the simple way. If he's called his brother, by definition, he is alive. That's the assumption of how we read this Mishnah. We're going to come back to that and revisit that. So, therefore, he has to be alive in order for the Eid Zomim to get executed. He can't be once he's already died. Then why does the Torah say a life for a life? Which seems to limit the death penalty to where somebody got killed. Because I might have thought maybe what happens with Edom Zomim is even when they just present their testimony to get somebody killed, they would already get the death penalty. Even that would warrant the death penalty. Tamalomar nefesh tachas nefesh. No, it says a life for a life. So therefore, they must have done something. They must have gotten to a certain stage. Ha'ena neharagin ad shigamer hadin. There had to have been a verdict against the guy. So what we're saying is that Stukim say, the Torah tells me a life for a life. There's no way he's getting executed, the Eid Zomim, unless he actually succeeded in getting the defendant killed. The Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say it's not true. Kasher Zamam says, plotting is enough. That's all you need is plotting. In order to do it. And as a matter of fact, there is a pasuk that shows me it's not where the guy was actually executed. It calls him his brother, which right now we think means that he has to be alive still. Well, then what does it mean when it says a life for a life? That teaches me the early bound for when the Edom Zomim would get killed. It's only if they actually reached a verdict. They reached a verdict, then we'll execute them. But if there was no verdict reached, no, they go home. There's nothing. They may get lashes, I suppose, for false testimony, losane, but that's about it. Yeah, clear, good, okay. The problem is, like I keep pointing out as we read this Mishnah, there are some things here that don't actually work. First of all, nefesh tachas nefesh, like I said, is a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. The pasuk you should have quoted is the one in Source Aleph on your sheet, right after the chart that I gave you. This is from the Torah's Parsha of Edom Zomen. I tried to avoid bringing a full pasuk because of Shemos issues. V'yamidu shnehu anashim ashalim ariv v'nei Hashem, dot, you have the two witnesses. Va'asisem lo kasher zamam la'asos li'achiv, you do to him, to the Eid Zomim, as he plotted to do to his brother. ... V'lo sachos einecha, you shall not spare them. Don't have mercy on them. Nefesh benefesh, life for a life, ayin ba'ayin shein b'shein, yad b'yad, ragel b'ragel. It's always very funny to me that like nefesh benefesh is named for this pasuk about, you know, executing somebody. I mean, aliyah is rough, but, you know, I don't know. That's the pasuk you should have used. So, in fact, some mafarshim simply changed the Mishnah. They say, yeah, the text shouldn't say nefesh tachas nefesh, the text should say nefesh benefesh, move on. That's, you know, that's your solution.
And the Tzedukim would have the same,
same
conclusion from these words.
Correct. There's not, it doesn't change anything. Yeah. The Pnei Yoshua brings that, and he says, I don't like changing the addition of a Mishnah. He's not cool with that. If you take a look at Source Beis, he says, Kacha nuscha b'chol ha-gemaros shalanu. He says, all of our Gemaras have the that addition of nefesh tachas nefesh. And not only that, in the books of Mishnah, without Gemara, just the straight Mishnahs, because sometimes you'll find a different edition in just straight Mishnah and in the Gemara, but he says, not in this case, all our Mishnahs have that edition. And it appears twice in the Mishnah. It appears in the beginning of the Mishnah, and it appears in the end of the Mishnah. It says, Nefesh Tachas Nefesh each time. Ela the Maharsha Zal Higia. But the Maharsha edited it. Shneomar nefesh b'nefesh. To say nefesh b'nefesh, v'kach kasa b'tosas yom tov, that's what the Tosas Yom Tov wrote as well. Uvadei d'hachi kushta d'milsa, d'mikra kasa b'e d'mzo min kachu, and it has to be so, because that's what, that's the pasuk that appears regarding Edom Zomamin, like we saw in Source Aleph. Uchmosha kasa v'rashi kan, and Rashi uses that here. Ela d'afi luhachi nira dochak l'shabesh kol hasfarim. But he says, I don't like this idea of saying all the Sfarim have the wrong girsa. V'davar shenemar v'nishna pamayim b'mishnah, and it's mentioned twice in the Mishnah. It's weird for it to be wrong in both cases. L'kach nirali l'kayim hanuschos. So he says, I think, keep the text the way it is. Then how do I explain it? So what he explains is, and because we're behind on our Amud a week pace, I'm going to just summarize what he says, but you can see it there. He says, what the Tzedukim were trying to say is that the pasuk of nefesh b'nefesh implies nefesh tachas nefesh. It implies what we learned in Parashas Mishpatim, that it's a life for a life, and that there actually was a death that took place here, and that's why the Edom Zomim are getting killed. That's the argument of the Tzedukim. Sorry?
I said Tzedukim.
Oh, yeah. I think we usually say Tzedukim, even though you can trace it to Tzedok as, you know, their supposed ancestor. That's what, you know, but nonetheless, it doesn't matter. Sadducees. We can say Sadducees, and everybody will agree. But that's their argument. And then they argue that if you go back to the pasuk I quoted you in Source Aleph, when it says velo sachos einecha, in between where it said ka'asher zamam and nefesh benefesh, it interposed the words lo sachos einecha, do not have mercy. So their argument is that since the Torah put that between ka'asher zamam and nefesh benefesh, that shows that it's not about ka'asher zamam. It's not about an unsuccessful plot. Rather, it's this guy actually committed murder, and therefore, lo sachos einecha, you shouldn't have mercy. That was the way that Tzedukim read it. They said, nefesh benefesh means a murder actually took place, and therefore, what you are doing is a life for a life, like nefesh tachas nefesh from Parshas Mishpatim. That's the read of the Bnei Yeshua. I didn't bring it because I thought that was like such an earth-shattering reread of the Mishnah. I brought it more to show you how resistant he is to changing an addition, even when it appears so logical that it should be nefesh b'nefesh, nefesh tachas nefesh. He's like, I'm not on board with this idea of changing the text. That's a key thing.
Why is there even a, do we feel compelled to respond to the Tzedukim at all? Mm. There are lots of different views that we would say are just wrong and not worth
you don't want responding to something that lends any credence to them.
Well, I mean, a couple of things, and you'll see just how far they went, because there's much more coming in the Gemara about what they did to counter the Tzedukim on this point. But I think there are a few reasons. Number one, the Tzedukim weren't just anybody. The Tzedukim were a very powerful sect. The aristocracy in the second Beis HaMikdash, including many of the Kohanim, were Tzedukim. So it wasn't a small thing. Like they were Kohanim Gedolim who were Tzedukim. It created big problems. So like you did have to take it into consideration. Add in the fact that it's surrounding the death penalty. Like they're alleging you're carrying out the death penalty wrong. I don't know how often Edom Zomen could ever possibly happen. Like I just mentioned, how hard it would be to satisfy what the Chachamim want here. This narrow window in which there was a Gemar Din, but the person wasn't executed yet. But you don't want to be accused, especially by people whose voices matter, of getting a death penalty wrong. So I suspect that's a piece of a piece of why they're responding, and not only responding, but canonizing it in the Mishnah. It also could be just logical reflection. Leave aside Gzeiras HaKasuv. Leave aside what they're getting from the Pasuk. The general principle of, if I asked you, you're writing the Halacha now, right? And I came to you and said, Edom Zomen who tried to get somebody killed but did not succeed, what should their punishment be? What would your
without
likely response be?
Torah.
Without the Torah. Just you are the Torah now. What would be the punishment for Edom Zomen who tried, who got a verdict, but did not actually succeed in getting him killed?
Not an execution, that's for sure.
Yeah. Isn't that...
Attempted murder, that's all.
Yeah. I would not have assumed death penalty. You have to think that a lot of people would have been on the side of the Tzedukim, and maybe that necessitates this as well. Yeah. But as a general principle, we love arguing with wrong views. Like, that's just, we do that. That's our business. So... that's in terms of the first part of it, this business with which pasuk you bring. The other piece of it, the response of the chachamim, right? So they say, the pasuk says, kasher zamam la'asos li'achiv, as he plotted to do to his brother. And we said, that implies that the brother is still alive. So the Ritva, who I brought you in source Gimel, says, I don't know what you're talking about. Since when does calling somebody his brother mean that the person is alive? A person is a brother when alive and when not alive, right? They're still considered brothers. He says, "Lav denafka lan midichsiv le'achiv." It's not that we're really getting it from the fact that it says his brother. "Dehavadei shaper mikri achiv afil achar misa." He is still called his brother even after death. And he brings you proof. "Ukedichsiv," like regarding the halacha of Yibum. Right? La'akim la'achiv shem b'Yisrael. He does do yibum in order to maintain the name of his brother. Uchsiv, kirvu su'as achechem. Right? This not this week's parsha, but the following week's parsha, in parsha Shmini, when Nadav and Avihu die, and then they're told, go take the bodies of achechem, your brothers. They're deceased. Ubegemar lo nafkalan dahar gwein neharagin elami dichsiv kasher zaman v'shein onshin min hadin. And he says the Gemara is not going to actually use the le'achiv drasha. The Gemara is going to simply say that if they killed the guy, they're not killed because it says kasher zaman. And it's going to go through kal v'chomer ein onshin min hadin and all of that. Avomi le'achiv lo nafkalan midi. We don't learn anything from le'achiv, he says. That's not where it's from. So then why did it bring le'achiv at all in the Mishnah? So, skipping to the punchline, he says, one line up from the bottom of the Ritva, the middle of the line, Elahacha l'ravcha demilsa noktu rabbanon. It was just there to sort of add another another source to support them in their argument against the Tzdukim, but it wasn't really the point. The point was not about Achiv and his brother is still alive. That's not actually where you get it. It's not really from that. So argues the Ritva. The Aruch Lener, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, liked the Ritva's question, did not at all find his answer impressive. He agrees with the question. The answer is kind of schwach. So he says it's not that, and I brought you his answer in Source Dalit. He says, "Lefiani is daiti efshal yashiv kushiyasa." He says, "I think you could resolve his question." Demiyuser leachiv kadarshinan dekra asi laashmeinan sheyasu bodin hazama bishvil achiv. He says, "No, you're reading the brother wrong. That's the problem." He's very clever. He says, "You're reading the brother relationship incorrectly. It's not as he had plotted to do to his brother." He says, the point of the pasuk is, we execute the Zomamin because of what they wanted to do. We execute them on behalf of his brother. Meaning, Shira Kasiv Huva Asisem Lola Achiv Kasher Zamam. The way to read the sentence is, due to his brother as he plotted, Dahainu, Bishvil Achiv Sheyir Enik Maso Mimenu, so that their intended victim is able to see that they are getting punished. That you're doing this to him on behalf of his brother, so that his brother can see this guy's downfall, which can only happen if the brother is still alive. That's the way that the Aruch Lener reads it. I don't know if it's pshat, but it's very clever. But going back to our the basic point of our Mishnah, this is all just, you know, trying to expand our understanding of it a little bit. But the basic point of the Mishnah is that Tzdukim believe you execute them only if they're successful in executing the defendant. And the Chachamim say that's nonsense. That's not true. Only if they got to a verdict and it was never actually carried out. Clear? So the Gemara now wants to argue this out. So we are 7 lines down of the wide lines. Tana, we learned. Berebi Omer. Berebi said. Berebi normally means either it's the name of somebody, his name was Berebi, or it means a great Talmid Chacham. However, the Ritva here thinks it means the son of Rav Yehuda Hanasi, which is interesting. But Berebi Omer, lo hargu neharagin. If they didn't succeed in killing the guy, they get killed. Hargu, if they succeeded in killing the guy, ain neharagin, they don't get killed, right? Which is what we've been saying. Amar Aviv, his father said to him, so the Ritva thinks that's actually Rebbe. Bini, he says, my son, lav kal v'chomer hu. Isn't this logical? Meaning, what we all thought. You're executing them for just getting the verdict. You won't execute them if they succeed? Why are we not executing them for succeeding? So Amar Lo, he replied, Limadatanu Rabbeinu, you taught us our master. She'ein onshin min hadin. We do not punish based on a kal v'chomer. This is a rule. You can't carry out a punishment that you deduced from something. The only time we carry out punishments is if the Torah says this is what you're supposed to do to the person who committed such and such a crime. We don't do it as a kal v'chomer. You follow?
For any degrees of anything you can't
correct. No, never do it as you can only do. That doesn't mean kal v'chomer now doesn't exist as a method. It does. So, as an example, the Gemara in Sanhedrin uses it a little bit when they talk about which punishments are considered worse based on which crime they're for, and this crime is worse than that crime, and it gets, you know, that kind of thing. There is a hierarchy, there is a scale. But what we're not willing to do is ever say, well, this crime gets a punishment, therefore that crime should certainly get. That we don't do. So, Disanya, and he says, I'll show you how we know this. It's a brisa. Ish asher yikach es achoso, bas aviv ovas imo. You have a pasuk which says, in the event that, this is in Parshas Kedoshim, in the event that a man is with his sister, the daughter of his father, or the daughter of his mother. He gets punished. So, Ein li ela bas aviv shelo bas imo. Ubas imo shelo bas aviv. You told me the daughter of his father. You told me the daughter of his mother. That sounds like a half sister, right? Half sister from one side, half sister from the other side. But what if it's a full sister? Bas imo ubas aviv minayin. How do I know liability if it's a woman who's actually his full sister? Talmud lomar ervas achoso gilah, because the pasuk goes on to say he has exposed the erva of his sister. So that is how I know. So we ask, ad shelo yomar yeshli bedin. What did the pasuk need to say ervas achoso to teach me that? I could have done it as a kal vachomer. Im anash al bas aviv shelo bas imo, if it's punishing in a case where it's his half sister from his father, ubas imo shelo bas aviv, and his half sister from his mother, bas aviv ubas imo lo kol shekein. How much more so if she's actually both of those? She's his full sister. Why didn't we extrapolate? Halamadata shein onshin min hadin. This teaches that we do not do that. We don't give punishments based on extrapolation, even where it seems to be simple logic. Not only that, onesh shamanu as hara minayin, they go on to say, so that's how you know the onesh, the punishment for the half-sister, for the full-sister, I should say. Where's the warning pasuk, right? Remember we said that there's no such thing as punishing unless the Torah, number one, tells you that there's a punishment, and number two, also gives you a basic prohibition, an azhara, right? We explained from the Sefer HaChinuch that that's because otherwise you might think, okay, there's a penalty for doing it, but it's not prohibited to do it. You just have to be willing to pay the price. You pay the parking fine for parking in an illegal spot. No, the azhara tells me this is actually prohibited. So where's my azhara? Where's my warning pasuk of don't do this for a full sister? Azhara minayin. Tamad lomar, because the Torah says, this is back in Parshas Achrei Mos, ervas achoscha bas avicha o bas imecha, the erva of your sister, daughter of your father, or daughter of your mother. So, ein li ela bas aviv shelo bas imo, ubas imo shelo bas aviv. So again, that tells me about the half-sister from the mother, the half-sister from the father, vice versa. Bas aviv ubas imo minayin, where's my azhara for the one who is a full sister? Tamba lomar, because there in Parshas Achrei Mos, you have an added pasuk, ervas bas eshes avicha moledes avicha achosecha hi. The erva of the daughter of your father's wife, born from your father, she is your sister, achosecha hi. Ad shelo yom, so the Gemara said.
Why do you need a pasuk for that, though? Why can't you use the Kama Homer just for the prohibition?
So that's what we're saying. You can't. That's exactly what we're learning here. Wait one more sentence. Ad shelo yomar yeshli ben hadin. Why did the pasuk need to say that? I could have learned that by kal vachomer. Ma im huzhar al bas imo shelo bas aviv, ubas aviv shelo bas imo. You already have a warning, an azhara, for half sister from the mother and half sister from the father. Bas aviv ubas imo lo kol shekein. Don't you know full sister? Halamadata she'ein mazhirin min hadin. So that tells me not only ein onshin min hadin, but also ein mazhirin min hadin. You can't get the prohibition either from a kal vachomer.
Why can't you learn something is also from a kal vachomer as opposed to the punishment? I understand.
Yeah.
You can't kill the guy. You can't enforce an exact punishment against someone off of a kal vachomer. The Torah has to say it, but to know that it's wrong.
What's the result of having an azhara? Now you're going to punish the guy. Without the azhara, you can't punish the guy.
No, but you need a pasuk for the punishment.
Yeah, you need a pasuk for the punishment.
You need a pasuk for the azhara.
Right, but that's what we're saying.
You need a pasuk for the punishment.
Right, but what we're saying is you need a pasuk for both of these. These two things.
Right, I understand that, but I'm saying why you need a pasuk for the azhara. I understand why you need a pasuk for the punishment.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to do something to someone without the Torah.
But this is also doing that. This is a critical piece. Like on Shabbos in my drasha, I used the war games, right? The end of war games.
Right.
So I'm going to use the beginning of war games now, right? When they're doing the drill for the nuclear weapons, turn your key, right? This is not remember. Come on, mm-hmm. I'm not the only one who remembers this movie. Thank you. So
I'll watch it before next week.
So you have to have these two different people who both insert the key and turn the key. That's what this is. One key is the Onesh Pasuk, one key is the Azhara Pasuk. And in the event that you were to tell me that I could get around one of them by doing the Kal Vachomer, right, then I will have eased the process of punishing this guy. Both of those are needed. An imperfect analogy, but...
I just feel that, you know, it's enough that...
Okay.
I'm not quoting anybody. It's just, I'm just logically thinking that if you have a pasuk for punishment, then that's how you can punish somebody. So what... But the, other than that, why? I don't know why you need
right,
a pasuk.
Yeah, but just, I think this...
You're just saying something's wrong.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do something. You're not actually doing something
yeah.
for the guy for it.
I might do a little digging during the week and see if I can find somebody who says something that'll satisfy you more. But it depends how many.
Not on my account. It's fine.
I think I have an answer, but I'm curious to see what anybody else has to say on it. Maybe there will be a further idea behind it. Okay. So the upshot of this at this stage is we know that that you're not going to make the Kal Vachomer argument to kill the Edim Zelamin, right? That's what all of this was for. But I told you, they went even further regarding disproving the Tzedukim. Watch this. Actually, no. First is a little bit in the Gemara first, and then we get to it. Chayvei Malkios Minayin. How do we know that Edim Zelamin not only are not executed if they actually carried it out, they have to get to the Gemara Din, but not carry it out. Also, if they were trying to give the guy Malkos, how do you know the law there?
Right.
Tamad Lomar, Rasha, Rasha. It's Gzera Shava. The Torah uses the word Rasha, Shehu Rasha Lamus, right? And, in the case of the death penalty, and Vahaya and Bin Hakos HaRasha regarding Malkos. So the two go together to teach me that in both cases this rule will apply. It's not only in one of them. I'm just looking at Rashi. The truth is, Rashi only says that what we're trying to extrapolate here is that they're only punished if they reached Gemar Din. Not the part about, and if you succeeded, then you don't get the punishment. It's only about the first part of it, that you have to have reached Gemar Din in order to get the penalty. That's the idea. Because we saw that, actually. That was what we saw way, way back. We saw the Rambam say that Kasher Zaman Velo Kasher Asa does not apply in a Malkos case. Even if they did actually get the Malkos carried out, they're still going to receive the penalty. So this is only saying you have to reach Gemar Din. Chayvei Galios Minayin. How do you know that this is true also regarding exile to an Ir Miklat? The same thing will be true there. The Asya Rotzeach Rotzeach. So we also link it also. The word Rotzeach is used regarding Ir Miklat, the city of refuge. And it's also used regarding somebody who's being put to death.
One second. The Eden would go to an Ir Miklat?
Where they testify that somebody is supposed to go to an Ir Miklat.
Right.
So they testify that someone's supposed to go to the Ir Miklat. They only have the penalty, which is not the penalty of Ir Miklat, but the penalty of Malkos. Correct. So that actually leads to an interesting question. Right? That leads to an interesting question. You just told me, we know that you have to get to a Gemar Din in order for this to be carried out. Right? For Malkos. Right? So why do I need a separate pasuk regarding Ir Miklat? Why these guys are Chayvei Malkos?
Sure.
They're getting Malkos. Why isn't it? You follow what we're saying?
Yeah, that I don't understand why you wouldn't need a separate pasuk.
No, but not everybody's on the same page yet. What we're saying is this: first, you told me about in death penalty cases how you know that you need to get to a Gemar Din in order to get the same penalty you tried to give them. Then you told me that in a Malkos case we have Rasha, and that teaches me also. You're only getting the penalty in the event that you reached Gemar Din. Now you're telling me that also where the Edim Zoman tried to send the guy to an Ir Miklat, to the city of refuge, they're only getting the penalty that they tried to give if they reach a Gemar Din because Rotzeach, Rotzeach. But what's the penalty for people who sent a guy falsely to a city of refuge? Their penalty is not to go to the Ermiklat. Their penalty is Malkos. So why aren't they covered by what you already learned regarding Malkos? That's the question. So look at Rashi. Rashi addresses this. He says, Chayve Golios Menalan. You see that? He says, Heiduhu Shechayev Ligolos Behuzmu. They testified that the guy should go into exile. He became a Zoman. Utanaba Masnisin Sofeges Horabayim. Mishnah said they get Malkos. Menalan ad shi gamar hadin. How do you know they have to reach gamar din? Dehani hoel velav mi din kasher zamam kamisrabu. Because they aren't learned from kasher zamam. Therefore, lo asi Malkos didhu mikzereshava de rasha rasha. Because the fact that they're getting Malkos instead of going to this Ir Miklat is not deduced from kasher zamam, because it's not kasher zamam. It's a completely different idea that we learned in the Gemara earlier. It's a different source. So therefore, you can't use the lesson that applies by the Malkos cases, because that's all based on the pasuk of Kasher Zaman. The whole Rasha, Shahu Rasha, that's all from there. You need a different source. You can't use the Rasha source, because that's from the pasuk of Kasher Zamam and Vayam Bin HaKos HaRasha. All of that, that's all of a piece. You can't learn it from there.
I hear Rashi, but I don't understand.
Because these aren't normal Malkos. Normal Malkos are a fulfillment of Kasher Zamam. This is what they're getting is not normal Malkos. What they're getting is a unique thing, because we said that you can't give them galus, and we had this whole limud for giving them malchus instead.
Okay, but that can't be the only malchus case where you give malchus and you can't give them.
Oh no, it's not just about galios; it'll apply to the others also. Like the case of we'll have to, right? Like the case of claiming that the guy is a ben grusha ben chalutza.
Right.
So ostensibly,
so
you need
the
I would think. I would think, according to Rashi. However, the Ritva gives a different answer, which I don't want to go into because we're going to run out of time and there's so much that we have to still cover. But I brought you the Ritva on the sheet in Hay, and you can take a look at that. He argues differently. He has a different read. Tosos actually asks here a different question, as does the Ritva. He wants to know, how do you know that with Mamon, it's only if you reach the Gemar Din? What about Edom Zoman who tried to cost somebody money? How do you know it's only if they reach the Gemar Din? The Gemara doesn't say. So he argues that it's from that same Nefesh ben Nefesh pasuk, because it also says Yad biyad, hand for hand. And he says that's where you get it from. But I don't know where Tosus got that from. Like, that's just like, you just made up a drasha. I don't know. Okay. We're going to at least start on, though, this next story, because it's wild. Tanya, Bryce says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai said the following. Yehuda ben Tabai was either the Nasi or the Av Beis Din. We'll have to see which one he was. Very, very early on, time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Erev ben Achama. This is like an oath. He says, Erev ben Achama literally means I will see the consolation. He's either swearing that if he's lying, he won't see the building of the Beis HaMikdash, or he's swearing that if he's lying, he will see consolation for the loss of his children. Like that, that's pretty sharp. What is he swearing to? Im lo haragti eid zomem lahotzi miliban shel tzedukim. I executed an eid zomem in order to show that tzedukim are wrong. Shahayu Omrim, Eina Edim Zomen Neharaganache Haraganidon. Because they used to say, you only execute Edim Zomen if their intended victim got killed. I killed him anyway. Now, what it sounds like to my ears is the guy was not liable for death, but I did it to stick it to the Tzedukim, to show them that they're wrong. That's what it sounds like. But that doesn't make any sense. That we don't kill people like that, number one. And number two, if the guy really wasn't liable for death under our rules, then what did you teach them? What does that mean? What is he doing? So we'll have to see what this case was. But right now, we'll see what Shimon ben Shetach says back to him. Amar lo Shimon ben Shetach, Ere ben Achama, he mimics the oath, Im lo shafachta dam naki, you spilled innocent blood. Sherei amru chachamim ein ha'edim zo min neheragin ad shiazumu shnehem ve'in lokin ad shiazumu shnehem. Evidently, Yehuda ben Tabai executed a single witness in a set where the other witness was not found guilty. So Shimon ben Shetach, who is his partner, one of them is the Nasi, one of them is the Abbezdin, says to him, you should know, you just killed somebody who wasn't supposed to get executed. That's a no-no. Oops. Yeah, you killed a single witness. So we're going to have to leave it on that cliffhanger note for next time. What in the world happened in the story? What happens to Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai? And is our edition of this story actually correct? All of that and more, God willing, next week.